Mel Porter.
With KFC, where fresh chicken is prepared by chefs all day, every day.
Clean Bandit and Rockabye on Today FM. It is Al here. I'll be with you until 2:30 this afternoon. If you'd like to get in touch, it's 0874100102. Now, joining me in studio is somebody who I consider, sure, I'll bring up his mic anyway just to begin with, but somebody who I consider to be one of the most intelligent and interesting and provocative artists working in Ireland at the moment. It's Blind Boy Boat Club.
Thank you very much, Al. That's very, very kind of you. I'm grand.
You've written a book.
I have written a book, yeah.
So I have the book here, right? So The Gospel According to Blind Boy in 15 Short Stories. Most people will have heard about this for the first time on The Late Late the other night. What did you think of your interview?
I was wrecked tired, man. I was in Galway at the Galway Comedy Festival the night before, and I went on the lash rather foolishly, you know, and got about 2 hours of sleep. So I was quite happy with the interview, but I don't even remember it happening. I was so tired, you know?
I thought it was a good interview, but and Ryan's a friend of mine. I like him.
Yeah.
I think he's a decent fella.
I think Ryan's all right. I met him off TV, and he seemed fairly sound to me.
Yeah. To me, I just wonder whether, I don't know, I wish people would take you more seriously when it comes to the book. You know what I mean?
Well, look, I wear a bag on my head. It's my own fault, you know? What am I going to do, you know? If I go around the place with a plastic bag on my head, I have to accept that people are going to think I'm a clown, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, it is a wise man plays the fool, they say, though. Yeah. Do you believe in that?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, I wear a bag on my head because, you know, I can go to Aldi after this interview and buy toilet roll and no one knows who I am.
Which is, it is important to you, your privacy.
Absolutely, yeah.
What is it about guarding your personal life that's important to you?
Mainly, like, I spoke on The Late Late about my previous issues of social anxiety, do you know? So maintaining my mental health and keeping myself in a happy state is very important to me. And I don't think, I think if I was being recognised in the street
and being grabbed for photographs and,
but even, yeah, either positive or negative, whether it's someone saying to me, I liked what you did or I didn't like what, all of that is quite difficult for my self-esteem. I'm trying to just feel good about myself because of me.
No, I can understand that. I mean,
and I'm shy and I'm quiet, do you know? Yeah. And I used to have agoraphobia and I used to get terrible panic attacks. So for me, it's quite important to just be nice and quiet and get on about my day and not bother anyone, you know?
Yeah, and the social media stuff definitely is anxiety-inducing. I mean, absolutely.
Yeah,
because I can't tell myself but compulsively look up my name and see what people are saying, and like it is, it's just anything negative sticks for a long time.
That's I've been dealing with that since Bebo. So I mean, for me now, I've much more resilience around the negatives. I used to be, about 5-6 years ago, I used to fixate only on the negatives. I don't anymore. I mean, what I do is if someone doesn't like what I do, if they think that something I do is garbage, I just say to myself, that person thinks it's garbage, and for them that's correct, and it's fine.
And you can get over it that way. Yeah,
I said it last week on my podcast. I said, like, I think Coldplay are garbage, but that's just my opinion. I'm not right.
Yeah, and if they can still sell arenas, and it's not
exactly, you know. What am I, an authority? But someone else might think that Coldplay are amazing, but for them they're amazing, for me they're not amazing. It doesn't matter, who cares?
Yeah.
So I accept that there are people out there who genuinely hate what I do, and I'm okay with that. That's fine.
But you don't, I mean, you're not an easy man. You don't make it easy for people to like the stuff.
No,
either.
I don't.
It's deliberately provocative. I mean, I think the description that I was given was 15 short stories in visual art covering myths, complacencies, contradictions, love, death, sex, politics.
Yeah.
So I wanted to read the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. I read the first story and then went on the lash. Okay.
Fair play. I would have done the same.
But all I can say is that it's incredibly well written.
Thank you.
Enjoyable to read because I enjoyed your preface where you said the written word kind of, it leaves you with the opportunity to paint your own picture in your mind.
Yeah.
But then it's gruesome at times as well.
Yeah, I mean, I use a stream of consciousness technique of writing where I thank you very much. I don't kind of edit as I'm writing. I allow everything to flow out of me, which means that you're getting it. You know, the human unconscious mind is either about sex or death. We want to have sex with everything and murder everything, and that is the core of the what a human being is. But society stops us. So when I go deep into my unconscious to write, there tends to be a lot of sex and murder going on.
Do you think at our core we're uncivilized?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And there's an evolutionary psychologist called Robin Dunbar, and he's got a thing called Dunbar's number.
Yeah.
And it says that humans are capable of caring only about 150 people. That's the average human. Like chimpanzees can care about 30 chimps.
Yeah.
We can do 150. It's also the average number of Facebook friends that people have. But beyond 150 people, that's when humans start to dehumanize. That's when we can turn on the television and see Syrian refugees being blown blown to bits and we can't
remain unaffected.
Emotionally connect. We care about them cognitively, but we can't emotionally connect because humans can do 150 and that's it.
Christopher Hitchens said, write drunk, edit sober.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
What do you think, yeah?
I wasn't, like, mouldy for most of the book, but, I mean, I would like to I write in cafes and bars, you know, because when I'm at home, like, in an office situation...
Do you write by hand?
No, I write with a laptop.
Yeah.
What I was doing, actually, I was writing on my phone with a little Bluetooth keyboard, which was handy.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, I like, some artists will, you know, they'll get off their heads on drugs and drink and try and get to their unconscious. Mm. Because I'm... kind of on the ball with my mental health, I can easily access my unconscious in a very safe fashion because that's what I do for my own journey, you know. So I can, some people can't access their unconscious because...
Well, some people are afraid to.
Yeah, I mean, could contain some damaging memories from...
I didn't enjoy psychoanalysis for that reason.
Yeah.
And I attended psychoanalysis with a doctor called Dr. Dick Luce, which I thought was quite funny. But anyway, that's his real name. But,
oh, my God.
But I found it a bit scary to go into parts of your mind that were illogical and that were not that more surface level.
But that's the point of it. It's like, of course it's frightening. I mean, we have defense mechanisms and our conscious mind prevents us at all times from accessing our unconscious because it is our unconscious that drives our irrational behaviour. But even though it's painful to go in there, it's of benefit for us to be aware of unconscious trauma because then it stops motivating irrational and harmful behaviour, you know?
People know that you're an eloquent and literate person, but I want to emphasise, you know, just how good the prose is. So I just want to read a little paragraph. Is that all right?
Work away.
In the winters, I'd walk home in the pitch black, not a hint of light. I'd click my tongue like a bat. That way I'd hear a lamppost if it was near. The sound would bounce back at me. When it's November dark, the slip on the ground underneath, you to dance with it or it'll crack you open. The cold has such bitter presence that you can feel your way through it. It has rises and lumps. You can sense the lukewarmth of a hedge, the trail that a panting fox leaves, a little band of clammy air that you can grab like a rope and use it to drag your way up a bohereen. In the summer, it'd be bright. I hated that. There's too much pomp and show to summer mornings. When it's winter and dark, you can get properly acquainted with your journey. You can get its honesty. You get to know its fears, its intentions. There's areas of the Limerick countryside that can't be trusted purely on grounds of personal integrity. These are where people fall into ditches or drown in bogs. The area charms that person into their death. It's never accidental. I've walked them all with no eyes. Some work.
Thank you very much.
I mean, the words are, they're incredible. It's the imagery is really vivid. It's...
Well, it's an actual attempt at literature, you know? I mean, I didn't want to just write an entertaining book with funny stories. It's like, well, I want to show respect for the written word in the same way that, like, when I'm making music, I really care about the music, you know? Mm. I make sure it's produced well and played well. So why not do that with the written word if I can?
And so, I mean, who is to read this? I mean, that story then continues on and becomes quite disturbing.
Yeah.
And... I just didn't expect it to go where it was going at all. You know, it's frightening. I mean, who sits down and curls up with Blind Boy Boat Club short stories?
The same people that like our work, the same people that like our songs. You know, there's always been a darkness in the music that we do. But, I mean, you know, the book is funny as well, obviously. Mm.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. I mean, I found all the stuff about the pee on his trousers very funny.
So, like... I don't know who sits down. Rubber Bandits fans, but people... Hopefully, what I'm hoping is people who enjoy... something that's well written and enjoy hearing good stories. There's an element of entertainment to it as well, you know. I don't think I created something that's up its own arse.
Yeah.
And I'm happy with that, you know. And that can be tough.
The writing is definitely kind of colloquial
You always have to be at the service of the reader when you're doing it, you know. I mean, effective communication happens in the language of the receiver, you know.
I'm wondering, on the Late Late, Ryan kind of was talking to you about the Michael Collins and De Valera story, the Arse Children.
Arse Children, yeah.
And then the kind of cannibalism at the end of the story.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't mention A Modest Proposal by Jonathan Swift, but was that in your head or...?
A Modest Proposal by Swift, which is a story by Swift in the 17th century, is it? Where Jonathan Swift proposed that a solution to the Irish famine would be for the rich to eat the children of the poor, which was years ahead of its time. People didn't get it. People were just like, this guy's nuts. Yeah. But he was doing satire before satire was really a proper thing.
Yeah.
I don't know why Tubberty didn't go for that. Tubberty was going for more contemporary writers, you know?
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Like, when I first read A Modest Proposal by Swift 10 years ago, like, you can't escape that. That's it. That's in you forever. And that becomes a touchstone for satire. So there is an element of that in it, yeah. It's Swift basically said, I'm going to make satire, but I'm going to go as extreme as I can to get my point across.
Yes.
That's what that story does. It's about Michael Collins getting Eamon de Valera pregnant so he can give birth to warriors out of his arse.
Yeah, which is funny in itself.
Yeah, but the story itself
has its own allegory, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, eventually the story is about the person who wrote that story, do you know? And the outrage that happens that somebody could write a story that offensive in Ireland and how anger unites people of different political views.
Yeah. But you've made, I mean, short of just not only just writing a book like this and the other art that you make, you've turned yourself into a work of art because of the bag on your head and the absurdity of one of the more respected commentators on mental health and modern life being somebody so unusual as you.
That's what I try and do, you know. I mean, I consider everything I do to be a work of performance art. I'm in a continuous state. I'm a living sculpture, do you know, and I like to cut through the solemnity of very serious issues. Because people aren't listening to people who wear suits anymore.
No. And John Cleese made a good point years ago where, you know, to be serious, you don't have to be solemn.
Exactly. Exactly. And that interview that, or it's a little talk that John Cleese did on creativity, that's a massive influence on me. He was the man who for me, was like, solemnity is this very useless thing that we use.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, law is very solemn. Religion is very solemn. The military is incredibly solemn. And solemnity tends to be this set of very strict rules that defends absurdity.
Yeah, we don't need it.
We don't need it. I mean, religion is absurd. Law sometimes is absurd. War is incredibly absurd. You know, blowing people to bits, dropping bombs from drones that are controlled in Arizona and it's happening in Pakistan. And what does the military do? It has all this pomp and show and you must have the flag this way and you must have your uniform this way.
Yeah.
These solemn rules, because when you take them away, you're left with the blind absurdism of the human condition.
Absolutely. And there is a lot of study of that in the book and all the short stories. It's incredibly well written from what I've done. I'm definitely going to finish it. It's searing, it's visceral, it's dark, it's gruesome, it's funny. And I just think that, you know, this is the first of hopefully many very, very good turns of literature from you.
And if any of the listeners want to get a taste of it, I've got a new podcast called The Blind Boy Podcast. And last week's episode, I read one of the short stories and I have another short story that I'll be reading on Wednesday morning. So that's The Blind Boy Podcast on iTunes or whatever.
Thanks very much, Blind Boy.
Yart.
Al Porter. With KFC, where fresh chicken is prepared by chefs all day, every day.